Hello and welcome to the Global City Missions Podcast. The podcast is hosted by Global City Mission Initiative. This is Seth Bouchel, GCMI's team leader in New York, and today we'll be discussing the topic forming emotionally intelligent disciple makers. As we've discussed plenty of times on the podcast, our philosophy of ministry at GCMI is to work as catalytic evangelists in various strategic populations in global cities to plant churches and form disciples who, as early as possible in their development, become church planters and disciple makers in their own communities. A more simple way to say that is that we think that part of responding to the gospel and following Jesus is learning how to share that same good news with others and teach them how to follow along with us. So we're trying to make disciples who make disciples who make disciples. You know, hopefully you get the idea. And in previous episodes, we've talked about different tools and practices that are helpful in facilitating that generational multiplication of ministry. Things like how to make spiritual statements in everyday conversations, which we talked about back in episode 2, or the training wheel tool that we use to help teach our leaders to better coach and direct others in the spiritual life. We talked about that back in episode 13. So in that same vein, I want to discuss another tool that we utilize in our ministry. It's an exercise known as sachet. And we've used this with a lot of people from tons of different cultural contexts and continue to find it useful for forming emotional intelligence in new disciples, both in their own interior lives and in their ministry to other people. So today, I'd like to look first and address why emotional intelligence is so important in the Christian life, because I think it's a category of spiritual formation that can sometimes be overlooked if we're overly driven by a more linear or formulaic paradigm of evangelism. And then I'd like to talk about the way that we've utilized sachet in our church networks and tell some stories about the fruit that practice produced in the lives of different groups we've worked with and made disciples among. So why is emotional intelligence so important, both in being a disciple and in discipling others? From my own experience, I would argue that in pursuing one like a strategy like we do with GCMI, two of the most difficult practices for individuals and groups are discernment and conflict resolution. I think for every follower of Jesus, but especially for new believers, it can be very difficult to tell the difference between our own interior voices and the leading of God's Spirit. And although in our ministry we place great emphasis on the Spirit of God leading churches through the reading of Scripture, I still think it needs to be acknowledged that all of us have a lot of competing feelings and experiences and internal voices that we bring with us into Scripture when we read it. And when we're seeking to hear God's voice, if we're not deeply in touch with and familiar with our own interior rhythms, the chances are that we're going to confuse our own feelings, our own fears, our own hurts, our own ego with the promptings of God. And in any gathering of people, it can be the case that the individuals who are most confident that they're right are the ones who are least critical about the sources of their own conviction. So, on the level of the individual, we want to be forming in people a reflectiveness and a self-awareness that helps bring about greater clarity of their own emotional landscape so that they have experience in identifying the different promptings that take place within their own hearts and minds. And on the level of corporate ministry, and especially generational ministry, where you have, you know, disciples forming the next generation of disciples, churches, planting churches, this kind of discernment is equally critical. Because releasing new disciples to minister to others is going to require that they have the ability to empathize and to bring greater internal clarity to others and to pastorally nurture or challenge as is appropriate the people whom they are discipling. So for both personal and interpersonal pastoral reasons, emotional intelligence is really a needed element of ministry. And it may be obvious, but I want to address how critical this type of ability is for conflict resolution. One of the maxims that I frequently say when I'm training missionary catalysts is that churches fight and young churches fight a lot. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but if we're working among groups who have little experience exploring and expressing their feelings or little respect for the emotional experiences of others, then what might otherwise be healthy conflict over how to be the body of Christ in our world and in our context, that can quickly devolve into pettiness, hurtful words, hard-heartedness, and maybe a resistance to intimacy out of a fear of not being heard. So let me give you a couple of quick examples from my own work. I mentioned before on the podcast a major conflict that broke out some years ago among one of the early church networks that I'd started. But to just fill in the details there, a local congregation had become aware of these new church groups and began to put tremendous pressure on a few of my leaders to go and be ordained by their local bishop and to bring the network under the authority of this congregation's leadership. Needless to say, the ensuing disagreement quickly created a lot of hurt as various peoples in that conflict, out of fear or anger or guilt or a variety of reasons, found ways to justify their own position. And in this case, it was very early in my ministry. I'd just gotten on the ground in New York, and I had not really spent adequate time trying to form in my leaders the depth of self-awareness and healthy emotional intelligence to prepare them to handle this situation. And in the end, just about everyone ended up feeling self-justified in their position and convicted that their own feelings on the matter were absolutely the will of God on the subject. But almost nobody was equipped to try and understand the positions taken by those who felt otherwise. And it left pretty much everybody in the group feeling confused and misunderstood. And it was really just a mess. Now, I'm not saying that this experience would have been completely avoidable, nor was the end result quite as stark as the break that I probably just painted here. But my point on this topic is that this exact conflict would have almost certainly gone differently if these church gatherings had a basis for having conversations that was built around better asking after and empathizing with the different voices leading them in their discernment on the subject. Let me give another example that's more positive and so maybe helpful. I spent last summer training and helping to direct a missions team in Europe that was working among refugees from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan. The team was itself made up entirely of Central Europeans. I was the only American in the room for almost all of our meetings. And so after we'd settled into the work, the emotional exhaustion and the stress of that ministry created a pressure that very quickly exposed relational strain. And anybody who's been on a mission team is probably familiar with this experience. So it was just an emotionally exhausting environment. People were working hard, and so strains started to show. And a few past resentments among team members, fueled by a lack of discipline about gossiping, brought the whole team to a breaking point. And in this instance, contrary to the one I just gave, I had been working on Sachet, the tool that we're talking about today, with my team leaders for weeks before we left for the mission. So when this came up, the group recognized the crisis breaking out. They sat down together and talked through their own feelings in the matter and actually came to a very healthy resolution. The conversation, full disclosure, took about 4.5 hours. There were lots of tears shed. Everyone was absolutely exhausted when we finished, but some long unreconciled feelings had been acknowledged and forgiven, and they were able to continue to work effectively there for several months, and came back to that conflict as a real turning point in their work together as a team. So I'm really thankful for the way God worked in that group to keep conflict from disrupting the work, and to help use this experience to actually bring about greater intimacy and trust on our team. But I'm not exaggerating when I say that in almost every church group I've planted, we've had to have a similar type of intervention, often more than once in the initial years of their life together as a new church. So I want to look at what those conversations look like and how a tool like Sachet helps facilitate this kind of growth among groups of disciples. So Sachet is an emotional inventory used to frame a conversation about our emotional life. It's actually an acronym, which stands for the 6 basic emotions common to all of us, right? So Sachet stands for sad, angry, scared, happy, excited, and tender. Now, I didn't actually create this acronym, and I have to quickly confess my dislike for the last category, tender. Tenderness in this tool can be a sense of missing or longing, so I might be tender that I haven't seen my niece or nephew in a while, but that isn't exactly sadness. Or I might feel tender because a friend of mine is looking for a job and just can't seem to find one, which is something of a sense of empathy or solidarity, but it's not a feeling that those other words quite articulate. So either way, it's not my favorite word, but I haven't come up with a better English word that still works for the acronym, so tender it is. But these 6 emotions sadness, anger, fear, which is scared in the acronym, happiness, excitement, and tenderness make up the baseline feelings for which most of our other emotions are going to branch off of. For example, apprehension or anxiety, those are really forms of feeling scared. Or irritation and resentment are often forms of anger. And the way this exercise works is that a person walks through each letter of the inventory and simply states what they feel and what it's connected to. And I come up with a few different rules for when we do this in a group. The rules for the speaker are that they cannot apologize for or try to minimize feelings that are stated, and that they can name as many instances connected to each word as they want, or none if they don't feel that way. The rules for those listening are that they can only ask clarifying questions, and otherwise they're not allowed to interrupt or to give any commentary about the feelings that are being said. And I want to explain a few reasons that these rules are so important. Regarding the rules for the speaker, I think it's often the case that we judge our own feelings and that we do not share, or at least share fully with others, out of a fear that we either ourselves are judging those feelings or that others are judging them as inappropriate. For many people, I think it's wrong. Many people, they think it's wrong to feel angry, or maybe they feel like it's a weakness to feel scared. And so when we feel that way, often we hide those emotions behind different words. Oh, I'm not scared. I'm concerned. Oh, no, I'm not angry, but I am bothered by such and such. And while it's true that having a larger emotional vocabulary, it's a great thing, and it allows us to be more specific in revealing our interior selves, for most of us, in pretty much every culture that I've worked in, there's a great vulnerability that comes with choosing not to mitigate our feelings, or to, in certain instances, to try to limit ourselves to more distilled articulations of our emotions. So I think it's important that we use those kind of feeling words at times to express more directly what's actually going on inside. Additionally, most of us, when we try to express our feelings to others, we sometimes feel the need to choose only the most dominant emotions relevant to a situation. So let's say hypothetically I were to get a new job. I might talk to my friends about how exciting it is, but I may not feel able to express the complexity of the other things going on. So maybe to talk not only about my excitement, but about my fear of new responsibilities that this job is going to bring, or my sadness about leaving behind what I'm currently doing. Or to use another example, if I were to lose a relationship and somebody asked me how I'm doing, I might talk about how angry I am at the situation or that person, but I may not take the time to acknowledge the level of grief and fear that comes with that same loss. So sachet can help us articulate the multidimensionalism of our emotional lives in a way that is truer and more thorough than we might otherwise do on our own. And one of the ways that I commonly use sachet that I haven't actually mentioned yet is in teaching new disciples to pray. For many people that I've discipled, especially if they grew up with some kind of strong religious background in childhood, they often will feel that there's only one right way to pray. And that way tends to be very formal and very formulaic. And so sachet has actually become a helpful tool for starting to build intimacy and confession into their relationship with God. And this is what I'll generally tell them. I say, just walk through each letter and simply state whatever the feeling is. So God, I'm angry about XYZ. And then sit and wait for 60 seconds or so and see if God doesn't have anything to say back. And if you still feel the weight of that feeling, just say it again. God, I feel angry about XYZ. And wait and listen. And maybe God will choose to be silent, and that's fine. Just move on to the next letter whenever you feel it is appropriate. But really try to express and share what's going on internally with God, and then give some space to listen and see if you don't hear anything back. So those are the rules for the speaker when we do sachet as a group. For the listeners, I think this can be a useful tool for several reasons. One important realization that I'm trying to build into any of our church groups is that having an emotion is not the same thing as needing to act on or react to that feeling. So I might be angry, but that does not mean that I can't be gracious or kind to you. Or I can be sad, but that doesn't mean that I can't celebrate with you. I can be scared, but still respond by making a decision that goes against my fears. But it's often the case that in conflict, especially when we listen to the feelings of others, we judge the correctness of those feelings rather than listen deeply, seek to understand, and then ask how and whether our sister or brother is going to choose to respond to that feeling. We assume that as soon as they articulated it, that's somehow related to action, and we're judging the correctness of it. So sashing is helpful, and then it teaches us to seek first to listen and to not assume how a feeling might translate into action. It also leaves us open to have to accept the ways that our own actions have made others feel, rather than immediately jump to defending or seeking to justify ourselves as a response to other people's emotions. Sashing can also help us to see the way in which we often interpret others' actions through a very limited lens. And there is a lot more emotional complexity operating in our daily interactions with other people than we often acknowledge or realize. And so this level of understanding and empathy is key to building intimacy and trust among groups of disciples. So that's the tool. It's actually very simple. But I want to emphasize again how helpful this has been for so many different individuals from literally dozens of cultures that we've worked with. I've had a lot of different people tell me that using this tool has changed their relationship with a significant other, or totally transformed their communication with a parent or with a child. And it may seem simple or corny to use this kind of tool, and many people dismiss it for that reason. But the reality is, in all of our lives, our emotional lives are very complex, and our feelings are God-given. This is the way that God has formed us. And so if in making disciples we overlook this essential aspect of our development in the spiritual life, then we aren't really forming people who can make disciples that are able to engage others as whole and complete people. And if we don't leave the space to really explore and develop a reflectiveness and an intelligence about our emotional lives, then we're probably going to cut off the Spirit of God from transforming and renewing some of the deepest parts of ourselves. So I want to challenge you to give more thought to this aspect in your own disciple-making ministry. And we would love to hear any comments or tools that have been practical and helpful in your own ministry that we might be able to adopt in our work with GCMI. But for now, sashay has been one of the most helpful tools that we've utilized to get at this same area in forming healthy and whole disciples who can reproduce that same experience of coming to maturity in faith to disciple others. Thank you for listening today to the Global City Mission podcast. You can find out more about GCMI at our website at globalcitymission.org, or you can visit us on our Facebook and Twitter.